This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. If you have dreamed of owning a property in Israel, close to the sea or close to the center of Tel Aviv, now is your chance to make it a reality. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa to discuss new property opportunities in Israel. For a private meeting with Barry Cohen to discuss your Israeli property or any Israeli property needs, WhatsApp him on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency. Your Israeli property is in good hands.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Of course, we're still in the middle of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. And last Friday was the first of the Friday prayers in the month of Ramadan. And the Temple Mount in Jerusalem is, of course, a focal point for Muslim prayers in general, particularly on Fridays, and even more particularly during the month of Ramadan. So when the Friday prayers come along during the month of Ramadan, it is quite a spectacle, and there is a lot of pressure for people to try to get to the Temple Mount to take part in Friday prayers. And last Friday, there were 90,000 people on the Temple Mount for Ramadan Friday prayers in this racist country that we have, according to certain sources. It is true to say that there was a restriction of certain ages and types of people to be allowed onto the Temple Mount. That restriction is not a racist restriction. That restriction is a security restriction because we've already experienced events where so many people get together and then there are breakouts of violence. And let's not forget that the Temple Mount overlooks the Western Wall area. So that is a significant security threat. There were more than 3,000 security police on duty, paid for by Israeli taxpayer money, to ensure that 90,000 Muslims can get to the Temple Mount to pray Friday prayers for Ramadan. So if that doesn't indicate the Israeli government and the Jerusalem municipality's commitment to allowing worshippers of all faiths to come to the holy city and to express their faith and to visit their holy sites, then I don't know what else we have to do in order to demonstrate that.
How many people can that area hold at any given time?
I'm guessing around that number. I'm not exactly sure what the maximum is, but the 90,000 seemed to go off almost without incident. Admittedly, there was a very, very heavy police presence as people made their way backwards and forwards. It's not only about the location itself, but it's also about the volume of people actually getting there. And I've actually been in the old city of Jerusalem when people are making their way to Muslim worshippers are making their way to the Temple Mount for prayers, not on Ramadan and not even on Friday. So I've been there when the pressure has been much, much lower than that. And it becomes an extremely busy and frantic place with people rushing to get there on time. For those people who have visited the old city of Jerusalem, and particularly the market area near to the Jaffa Gate, you'll know that the alleyways are narrow, that there are shopkeepers on both sides, that there are people cruising around, touring around, and just ambling. And then all of a sudden, you get these massive numbers of people trying to make their way towards the Temple Mount for Friday prayer. So the surrounding area becomes very, very congested and potentially a place for any kind of a terror attack or incident to take place. So the security forces have to be there, the worshippers have to be there, other people who want to just tour around and be there on Friday, because Friday is generally quite a busy day anyway in the Jerusalem market area, the old city. So it all becomes very, very congested. But apparently 90,000 works well. And of course, all the vendors and the food sellers and things like that will have done well, even though during Ramadan, of course, the Muslims are fasting. but everybody has to buy their food in order to take home for iftar, which is the meal of the breaking of the fast at sunset. So it becomes a very busy and frantic place. 90,000 seemed to work out okay. There were no incidents to report whatsoever.
The IDF chief of general staff yesterday announced that all leave has been cancelled for serving soldiers. How can we interpret this move?
Well, I think that there's one of two directions that we can look at this. The first direction is as a potential public threat to our enemies, to say we are not going to tolerate the existing situation. And even though the ceasefire in Gaza has rolled on for almost 2 weeks now without any meaningful progress towards seeing hostages released, so this could be interpreted as something of a threat. But I think that this is more than just a threat. I think that this is a serious attempt by our new Chief of General Staff, Eyal Zamir, to make our army ready for whatever may come next. And I think there are a number of scenarios that have been already constructed in order to work out what the new leadership of the IDF would like to do. There have been ongoing activities, I mentioned yesterday, some targeted killings, some preventative actions in Gaza, in Lebanon. There was even a report of an attack by the Israeli Air Force in Syria against Syrian government installations last night. So the IDF continues to be extremely active, but obviously not quite as active as we saw during the height of this war. The Chief of General Staff is now taken over, and I think he's trying to spread a slightly different atmosphere around the army leadership and filtering that down to the soldiers on the ground. So he said, no leave, everybody needs to be ready. Mm-hmm. He did warn that we have to learn the lessons of October the 7th and we have to be ready for every eventuality. It's also been noticeable that a special exercise was implemented throughout the IDF to test the security of military bases around Israel. There was a day where this security detail at the main gates and around the borders of Israel's key military installations was tested. I'm guessing that that would have been particularly true for those bases that are nearer to our borders, either in the south or in the north, or potentially even on the Egyptian border and potentially even along the Jordanian border, because one never really knows from which direction any attack might come towards our bases. And let's not forget that we also have this drone threat, that drones are now very much part and parcel of our military activities and those activities of our enemies, and we need to be ready for them. So I think that the Chief of General Staff, Eyal Zamir, has just tried to send a message that we just need to be ready for every eventuality. And as such, right now, particularly as we move into the Purim period, where, of course, there is a lot of outside activity, people are outdoors, we have a number of different Purim parades, which are being organized on the streets of Israeli towns and cities, most of them Friday this week, some of them happening on Sunday. And so we just need to be ready for every eventuality. And linked to that is an interesting story about the Haredi draft, because as listeners may recall, this is one of the key areas of major conflict and dilemma within Israel, where many of the ultra-Orthodox youth, particularly those who are enrolled at places of higher learning, are exempt from serving in the army or have been exempt from serving in the army up until now. But the latest court decisions and laws have effectively removed that exemption. And right now, the IDF is obliged to call up all ultra-Orthodox youth. And we understand that the army has sent out another 14,000 draft orders to ultra-Orthodox youth. Having said that, already 10,000 draft orders were sent out. Out of those 10,000, 177 individuals actually enlisted so far. And the target that the IDF has set itself to enlist 4,800 ultra-Orthodox soldiers each year seems a long, long way off in terms of being able to achieve that. It is a target that the IDF is very determined to achieve. It does cause quite a lot of rift within our society, with the ultra-Orthodox community really opposing this. But I think the message across the IDF in general is we have to be absolutely prepared for anything that might come up. And we have no idea at the moment what the political sphere will decide, what the Prime Minister and the members of the Security Cabinet might decide in terms of future IDF activities. We understand that things are going to change. There are messages that have been sent out that said any activity that the IDF is likely to undertake in Gaza in future will even be more intensive and more intense than that which we saw previously. It's going to be interesting to see exactly what that means, because I find it very difficult to believe that it could become anything more than what we saw in the early days of the war. But only time will tell. And of course, we're being made ready for every eventuality.
Well, on that note, in spite of a great deal of international diplomacy involving representatives of Trump's administration, there doesn't seem to have been any progress with the hostage deal. Is there any room for optimism here?
I think we have to always be optimistic, and we always have to think about those 24 individuals who we consider to be still alive and being held captive in Gaza right now at this moment, as well as the 35 who we believe are no longer alive, but whose bodies are still being held in Gaza, either having been killed and taken on October the 7th, or having been kidnapped to Gaza and being killed during the period of that captivity. And we have to keep our eye on that particular target. Quite a number of things are going on, and sometimes it almost seems a little uncoordinated and a little frantic. So we've got the work that Adam Bula did to try somehow to secure the release of US citizens from Gaza. And we understand that he was involved somehow in some direct negotiations with Hamas for this purpose. As I discussed with you yesterday, he's come out denying that he's tried to prioritize US citizens above all of the other captives who are being held in Gaza. But it's interesting that we've also got US Secretary of State Marco Rubio involved in this. He's had meetings in Saudi Arabia, and we've got the special envoy Steve Witkoff, who's made his way now to Qatar for the negotiations that are going on there. It almost seems sometimes as if the members of the Trump administration are even stepping on each other's toes as they move through, because there was a statement that was made by Marco Rubio about Adam Bula, saying that he did try a one-off attempt to secure hostages, which didn't bear any fruits, that wasn't successful in any way. It's difficult for me to understand exactly what Adam Bula's role is going to be moving forward and exactly what he was trying to do by getting involved. But I think that most of the effort right now is being focused through Steve Witkoff, who, as I say, is in Qatar along with an Israeli delegation. It's not clear whether Hamas have direct representatives at those negotiations. It's also interesting that Hamas have tried to send out one or two relatively positive signals about potential for a deal to be done. But we've still got this elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room is that everybody is talking about the next stage of this deal, removing Hamas from power. And yet we are negotiating with Hamas to remove them from power. Something doesn't add up for me. Something seems a little off in terms of either the true intention of removing Hamas from power or the means that they're using in order to try to achieve that. I'm still hopeful with the pressure that's being placed, both the military pressure and the lack of aid coming into Gaza and the lack of electricity in Gaza and the pressure from the US administration and potentially from Qatar and Egypt, that there might still be some movement towards releasing hostages. If so, I'm sure that Israel would be willing to again show its concessions. The fact that we've had a ceasefire ongoing for almost 2 weeks without any hostage releases has some sort of an indication to me that the Israeli government feels that by continuing to respect that ceasefire, it may well bear fruits. I certainly hope so.
Yeah, it's just keeps going on and on, and it just encircles as well. And then we don't have much time to talk about it, but the Houthis in Yemen have announced that they're going to resume their attack if Israel doesn't start sending in aid. How much of a threat, a realistic threat, is this?
Well, I think that the Houthis are always a threat, and they've actually shown themselves able to reach us when they need to. They, of course, have a lot of sophisticated missiles within their possession. They've also got these drones that they use, that they send. We have shot down many of their missiles and many of their drones, but it only takes one to get through the security cordon. We've seen that happen. We were exposed. There was a drone that attacked a building in Tel Aviv that came from the Houthis. So they certainly have some level of ability and sophistication that they can cause us some aggravation. The good news about the Houthis is that they're so far away that we can see things coming from a distance, and we can scramble whatever we need in order to protect ourselves. And also we have the help of the US. The interesting thing about the Houthis is, of course, that they're very reliant on direct support from Iran. And right now, the US are trying to engage with Iran as well to try somehow to weaken their position. But I think that the Houthis are a real threat, not quite the same as the threat that we have directly on our borders, but certainly one that we can't ignore.
That is where we leave it. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Anthony, tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. If you have dreamed of owning a property in Israel, close to the sea or close to the center of Tel Aviv, now is your chance to make it a reality. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa to discuss new property opportunities in Israel. For a private meeting with Barry Cohen to discuss your Israeli property or any Israeli property needs, WhatsApp him on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency, your Israeli property is in good hands.